Hey guys, welcome to Thrive Bites Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Colin Zhu, and thank you so much for listening on. You could have been anywhere in the world, and you decided to spend just a few moments of your precious time, and we greatly appreciate it. Here on the podcast, we talk about three things: living a plant-powered lifestyle, and enhancing emotional resilience, and creating a thriving mindset. And I interview a range of passionate guests, such as physicians, dietitians, coaches, entrepreneurs, and many more. And please join me as I deliver these engaging, informative, and high-valued conversations for you. And just remember, the first five seasons of the Thrive Bites podcast can now be found in the new The Chef Doc app, available in your Apple Store and Google Play stores. So what are you waiting for? Come on inside. Hey guys, what's going on? This is Dr. Colin Zhu, and we have a great, great episode for you guys today. I'm going to be interviewing Carrie Severson. She is an author as well as a founder CEO of her own book publishing house. She has a powerful personal story about burnout, resilience, getting through the weeds and layers of coming out to the other side and uncovering and rediscovering your voice. And it's a very powerful story about uplifting others. So you don't want to miss it. And we'll see you guys inside. Okay, guys. Well, welcome to another episode of Thrive Bites Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Colin Zhu, and thank you so much for being here with us. You could have been anywhere in the world, and you decided to spend some precious moments from your life to be with us today, and we greatly appreciate it. So we are super, super excited for our next guest. Her name is Carrie Severson, and she is the author and chief executive officer of the Unapologetic Voice House. It's a hybrid book publishing business. She's been in the storytelling industry for 30 years now, and she started this company back in 2019 after spending many, many years of pitching to different kinds of literary agents and wanting to publish this traditionally. And then after her ebbs and flows through that process, she came down to the same thing of, you know, being rejected, but realizing that they all love the work. They just couldn't, you know, they had to pass her up. So I want her to go a little bit deeper on this. She has an amazing, amazing, amazing story. So we're going to bring on to the stage, Carrie. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I'm so, so excited for you to be here. You have a very, very powerful story. And being an author myself, you know, it definitely resonates with me. I'm actually in the works in my head, thinking about another book myself. So, I self-published my first book. So haven't really dipped my toes in traditional just yet. So I get it. You know, it's just the roller coaster ride that many people don't know what happens behind the scenes.
And it's a marathon too. The book industry is so changed so much, and it's changed so much since I've been in it. I've been published through for a long time, for 30 years, both in magazines, newspapers, books, both my own and others. And every experience is a little bit different. But the Unapologetic Voice House came about because I get so tired of being compared to these literary giants. My first memoir came out in 2022, but I pitched it for about 5 years. And I pitched close to 100 agents. 77 of them compared it to Brené Brown, Elizabeth Gilbert, Gabby Bernstein, and then said because they didn't have 100,000 followers, they were passing. So I woke up one morning after 5 years of hearing this, and I'm highly intuitive. I trust that spidey sense. And I heard deep down in my bones, be the house, scare the crap out of me. But I created a hybrid publishing house. It is more traditional than not. We do have like mainstream retailers, account managers, you know, editors and distributor designers. And the thing that most authors don't understand is that, and even before I became an author, I didn't want to hear this. You're 100% responsible for like keeping this thing alive and up in the public and marketing it for the end of time. Like once you put something in the market, it stays in the market. You have to consistently give it love. And so anyway, but yeah.
I totally hear that. My natural question came to me before we go into our main questions is, what drives these changes, right? Ooh. You had talked about 20s, 30 years now, right? Yep. What drives these changes? You know, is it like the advent of internet, social, like what drives it?
So the really big change in the last couple of years has been subscription boxes, where when COVID hit, people stopped putting their money in these big stores and started giving small businesses $40 a month, $50 a month to curate what they need to be up to date, to feel good for whatever, you know, whatever purpose. And the book industry was just one of those industries that it impacted. And so instead of getting your books at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, you're giving money to a self-help or a self-esteem, a mental health small business. And once a month, they're sending you a book to check out. That drastically changed the publishing industry.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Very interesting.
Yeah. That's
let's see. Let's go into the nitty gritty. So before we hop on to, you know, building the house, right? You talk a lot on the story that I understand is that you talk a lot about burnout and you talk a lot about, you know, rejection, right? And there's so many layers to that and everyone's individual story is very different, right? So can you tell me like the key moments? We did touch on it briefly about, you know, the rejection, but were there, you know, can we talk about what are the big moments that led you to this turning point in your life where you're like, nah.
Yeah, I give up. Yeah. So I started in 2011. Well, let me back up here first. So my fight or flight kicked in when I was in seventh grade, however old you are there, 13 maybe. I was bullied badly in middle school. I'm 5'9". I'm curvy. I have crazy curly hair. And I did not look like anybody else growing up. And so I was sort of picked on about that. And there was this group of girls that would threaten me. I mean, physically, they would like call my house and tell me I was going to get beat up the next day. I bribed my way through seventh grade by giving costume jewelry to the toughest kid in school. And I came out of that experience really recognizing, first, I'm an entrepreneur, but B, I really wanted to make an impact in the way girls treated girls and women treated women. And I, at my line in life was, we can be better and we can do better. We can support one another. And so I went off to journalism school to get involved in the media because I thought if we could change where the spotlight landed and girls had different role models and women had different role models, things would be different. Right. And so I've always been an advocate for self-esteem. I've always been, personal development and loving on yourself and female voices. So I started a nonprofit in 2011. It was a bullying solutions organization for young girls. And it was right before Michelle Obama launched StopBullying.gov. She partnered with MTV and Facebook. She created all sorts of things in the country. And my little tiny shop just exploded, went national really fast. And I, despite the fact that I built something that was strong, that had great pillars, that was sustainable, I could not sustain it and could not keep up with the demand. You know, all the things about burnout that are happening today, fatigue, weight gain, sleeplessness, mood swings, fight or flight, all of it was there. And I didn't know how to manage it because it wasn't talked about back in 2012, 2013, the way it is today. So I had to piecemeal that journey together myself. Find what worked, find what supported me. But really what compounded it, what like led to it was my lack of boundaries, my inability to ask for help and really see that it's like I had people around me that I could literally give things off to and say, I can't take this on. You have to do it. Because as an entrepreneur, particularly as a young one, it's really easy for someone like me to get in the driver's seat, stay in the driver's seat and just go. I know how to do that. And to get out of that space is not just a mental thing. It's a cellular thing. It's a nervous system thing. And I did not know how to do that.
So getting out of the space of being in the driver's seat and letting someone else and delegating things to other people.
For sure. Absolutely.
Gotcha. Gotcha. If I heard you correctly, you said you were in seventh grade and then you had those incidents. And then you said as a entrepreneur. So were you an entrepreneur starting at seventh grade?
Probably. I mean, like I was buying. It's crazy. I was literally like, I'll give you this for this, and exchanges of services for goods. And yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite definitions for those that are listening that are not entrepreneurs is sometimes entrepreneurship could be associated with just being fancy, right? Or just being everything business oriented. And I found one of the best definitions of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship is at the end of the day, it's like we're problem solvers.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, someone has a perceived problem, and an entrepreneur basically, you know, not one, but like a bajillion different ways of how to solve it.
Yes.
So at the core of it, they're a problem solver, right? Yep. And you exemplify this by the nonprofit in 19 and, mm-hmm. you know, indirectly Michelle Obama just kind of like gave you a boost. And then, you know, I think it was a positive problem, a good problem to have that I can't do it. And so, very interesting.
It was so big. And I remember I spent like 18 months in research and development before I launched this nonprofit. And again, going back to your intuition, like I could see something was happening in the country, because at the time I live in Arizona, so I was focusing on Arizona, but state budgets were being cut, education programs were being cut, after school programs were being cut. And I kind of leaned back and I remember thinking, what's going to happen to all these kids? Where are they going to go? It's not the 80s. You're not sending them home on the street, you know, like having them walk home like you could in the 80s. And I sat there for a year and a half researching, and I was very meticulous. I was very slow on it. It wasn't something I created fast. And when I hit the go button, I published it. I told everyone what I was doing. A lot of people already knew. And within literally hours, I got check out Facebook, all these messages. And Michelle was at the White House with MTV and Facebook doing a live on stopbuilding.gov. And it was just synchronicity and like that serendipity of, I don't believe in luck, but I believe, you know, right place, right time, right product. But that has so much to do with trusting your intuition and following, you know, your gut. And
yeah,
I think that's a lot of entrepreneurship as well.
For sure.
And so from the get-go, it was, you know, instant. And by the end of the first week, we had pilot programs, we had partnerships lined up, we had kids enrolled with our summer camp programs. I had TV segments booked, and it just never let up for years. That was what it was like for years, day in and day out. I worked like a dog. This was before people were really talking about burnout. So I say I was burned out before burnout was the thing to do or to be. Mm-hmm. And so I've been in this space, in this research for a decade. And it's fascinating because who I was then and what I know people are doing now and how they're feeling now, it doesn't change. The circumstances could change, but the feeling of that rat race doesn't change until you know what to do to get out of it.
That's a very good point to talk about, is that the rat race doesn't change. And I mean, it doesn't matter what industry, it doesn't matter what sector.
Yep.
I think it's like this feeling of continuously being pushed by either yourself or an external force,
right?
Metaphorically speaking, to something that literally has no end. And you're continuously, you know, just saying to yourself, oh, there's always more. There's always more. There's always more to achieve, more to make, more to consume or whatever, right? And it's just like never enough, you know? It's interesting. It's like that kind of mentality is like never enough. And then we have these deep-seated fears. I think the number one fear of, you know, humans is like just not being enough, right? So it's a very interesting dichotomy. And it's something that, you know,
I used to always say, when this happens, when we get this check, when we get this partnership, when this person comes and helps, I'll stop. I'll take a break when. And when never came, because as a nonprofit, you know, the check is never big enough and there is never enough time to train the number of people that you have to train in order to get it bigger. Yeah. So I had this massive partnership with USA Network. They were doing like commercials with me and they were flying, you know, coming down for me, this like rooftop party in Phoenix and big photo shoot. And I hated it. I like went home and I cried that night and I'm like, there's something wrong here. I should be ecstatic about this. I got to the point where I was actually resentful of the work. I was resentful of the position. I was resentful of losing my identity in this thing I created. I created something where I was the middle of the wheel. I was the spoke and I was the tread, you know, like there was I was throughout the entire thing. Anyway,
so what would you say? So let's flip that a little bit, right? Because this is a very good, using your story, you're using your personal story and someone listening to this and being able to kind of use it as an example. If you were to flip it, right, and go back in time, how would you do it differently so you could have prevented, I guess, a certain level of burnout or getting to that point, would you say? What would you have done differently?
From the very beginning, I would have stayed in a full-time position and done this part-time, done this as until I could find the funding to actually support like staff for 3 years. Me as the CEO, somebody else as the CMO, chief marketing officer, and even somebody else as like the COO. So I wasn't doing all of those things. I definitely would not have been the person delivering the program out into the community and then running over to Channel 10 to do the segment and then running over to whoever I had to go to speak that night. Yeah, I would have.
You were every department essentially.
I was, absolutely. Even though we had a board of directors and an advisory board, I had five interns with me on a regular basis and a ton of volunteers. It was still, because it was such a hot topic at the time, bullying, especially girl-on-girl bullying, people wanted me on the stage talking, and they wanted me on TV talking, and then they wanted me in the schools talking. And when I tried to pull out from one of those things, and give it off to our board or volunteers, you know, folks would freak out and they'd be like, I'm not paying for this without you. And
yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And it's almost like, I guess it sounded like you didn't really intend to kind of be the face of it all. Like you wanted to create something that wanted to operate on its own and kind of operate on the background, but it ended up being that you became the face of it. Right. Yeah. And that wasn't necessarily like what you want to do from the get-go.
I know. I didn't mean to do that. but I believe all things happen for a reason. And so if I didn't do that and I didn't burn out, then I wouldn't have been able to recover and learn the things I did. And here a decade later, now I go around and I actually, last year I had 6 speaking engagements with healthcare organizations and companies where I deliver burnout recovery topics. You know, and so I'm able to take what I've learned and use my pain and my growth for the greater good of others. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Let's talk switch gears a little bit and talk about, you know, you have had experience with journalism, right?
Yeah.
And then you had talked really briefly about being rejected from those literary agents and you decided to take that to create your own publishing house, right?
Yep.
So before we get into the publishing house and what it does and what it serves, what is it, you know, tell me about your experience with journalism and how do you use those skill sets and experiences to what you're applying today?
Cool. Well, I got into journalism really honestly because I felt like it was the best place to go support this self-esteem girl on girl thing I wanted to accomplish, where I felt like growing up in the 80s I had one role model. She was on TV. She was the only like full-size girl. I grew up in the supermodel era and that was very painful and toxic, and so I figured if I could get into the media and change where the spotlight landed, things would be different. So figured journalism was the best place to go. And I fell in love with words and storytelling. I realized early on that I wasn't out to be like not biased, and I wasn't the best person to like share what was happening in a specific area. I was much more of an essayist, a columnist, using my pain and my growth for the greater good. I've been doing that for a long time. I've been very good at that. The journalism skills that you learn, the questions and the probing and the research is, you know, great. I love work. I love research as a result of it. So I'm still researching burnout. I'm still researching personal development and constantly uncovering new techniques and new tools and new skills that I share with others. So my first book is my memoir. It's called Unapologetically Enough. And that came out in 2022. And because it had the results it had and is called a mental health book, that totally took me off guard. I was not expecting that. But a lot of people fell in love with the storytelling element in itself. The way that I'm able to communicate in a raw, vulnerable way, 100% related to my 30 years of craft, of like honing my craft as a storyteller, which started at Arizona State University as a 19-year-old journalist, you know? The follow-up piece I'm putting out in April of 2024, The Enoughness Method, it's a burnout recovery guided journal. And I use my journalistic skills of digging and finding as much research as I could, as many tools, techniques, tips as I could to share with whoever buys this next one.
Hey guys, we're going to be taking a short break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hey guys, what's going on? This is Dr. Colin Zhu, and thank you so much for hopping on to this week's episode. Guys, it's 2024. What is your intention for this year? Who do you want to become, and how do you want to feel? Some of the things that you might be, you know, looking to do is to lose weight. Some of you guys want to get out of your family history and genetics and not play victim to your medical and health destiny. Well, I'm here to tell you that it's very, very important to kind of look at some facts and figures. For weight loss, 71% of Americans are overweight and 40% are considered and classified as obese. And these numbers are continuously rising. A lot of these are associated with a lot of medical issues, arthritis, gallstone issues, heart disease, cholesterol, diabetes, cancer, and the list goes on. And also having and carrying extra weight increases your risk for COVID. Also, you know, in terms of chronic disease, 60% of Americans carry one chronic disease, 40% two or more. Whenever I get a patient, it's usually a laundry list of medications that they are taking at the same time. Guys, if you are looking for a different and alternative solution, I've created a solution for you guys, and that's in the form of group coaching. If you want to be coached by us, Dr. Zhu, and our team members, me and my team, I've set up a beautiful, beautiful 12-week, 3-month program that's going to be led by your own respective group coach, also led by me teaching you expert classes. And we teach you on what to eat, how to shop, what recipes to go for, where to navigate the supermarket, your pantry, your kitchen, and learning all about sustainable strategies on losing weight and preventing chronic disease. So if you want to learn more, click on the link below, and we would love to set up a breakthrough call with you guys to see if we are a mutual fit. And I want to be able to cheerlead and advocate you guys and be a support for your wellness journey. So click on the link, schedule a call. We'll see you guys on the next one and enjoy the rest of this episode. Welcome back to Thrive Bites. Let's get back to the interview. Gotcha. And what do you hope to accomplish with the next book?
It's a good one. I haven't thought about that yet. You know, I guess burnout is still a really, it's a problem. It's still a problem. It's a problem for a lot of people. I think it's creating a big gap in the workplace. It's a gap within generations.
I can frame it in a different way. So you know how, like, when you started your nonprofit and you're like, okay, it came on really fast and there was no perceived quote unquote threshold of like, how much can we go? Right. And it's like a room, right? It's like a conference room. And you know how, like, they have a placard that says maximum capacity of people. Right. So it's almost like that kind of, you know, there was no threshold, right? So if you could apply that same analogy for this book, it's like, is the goal to have people, you know, be more equipped with more skills, feel less perceived burnout, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely less burnout. I recognize the level of burnout so many people are at, and I know that pain and I know that frustration. And this isn't just sharing how I recovered from it. This is sharing the things that you can do in small bite-sized pieces to come out of it yourself. And so the goal is that men and women who are experiencing burnout have something that they can turn to 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, and put some energy back into themselves to recognize how to create boundaries, how to engage your vagus nerve. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of, you guys know what the vagus nerve is, but there are a lot of people who don't, and how it relates to your nervous system and how you can sing your way out of burnout 10 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is the real goal, is to give them an opportunity to recognize that you can change, you can come out of this, but you have to put a little bit of energy into it. It's not like you just take a long vacation and poof, you're better. it's reprogramming a couple of habits, small but steady, on a long-term basis. Give yourself 6 months. I don't have that heaviness in my chest anymore. Give yourself a year. I don't feel like I'm going to throw up every time I go to work.
Yeah. It's, you know, for us, you know, I work in a preventative space, the wellness space, you know, getting people on the proactive track. Yeah. And as Americans, we just operate on, you know, I want it fast. I want it now. I want it yesterday, because we live in a Amazon era. Right. But like you said, it's a process, it's a practice, right? Yes. And it's the journey, not the destination. So that's, I'm totally with you, you know, on that. It's really about being equipped fully, as many as possible. You've done a lot of research for the book to be able to get as many, you know, tools. The first book, you know, it sounds like you've had a lot of success with it. Can you provide some examples in terms of, because you talk about storytelling. So I'm presuming a part of that is really about discovering your own voice. And that's probably what led you to, you know, building your house, right? Yeah. Your own publishing house. Can you give some examples, you know, what that has allowed other people to uncover for themselves?
Me finding my voice, or how do you find your voice?
Both, you know, okay. Or, you know, from the first book, because, you know, it sounds like you've had a lot of great feedback from it.
Yeah. So the Unapologetic Voice House, that very specific. So that name did have a lot to do with how I wrote this book. So I was just about to turn 40. The man who is now my husband freaked out because we fell in love so quick and he got scared. And so he like disappeared for 3 months. I'm throwing him under the bus. I'm going to get that later.
Under a rock or something? Like, where'd he go?
He seriously did. He disappeared for about 3 months. But if you read the book, you'll learn all about us. Yeah. So I just got to a point where, you know, I'm an empath. I'm highly intuitive. And throughout my life, I was always told, you're too much. Like, I would feel too much. I would laugh too loud. I'm too tall. I was always the tallest kid in school from like second grade. And the concept of being unapologetic just came to me where I was like, you know what? I'm tired of having to apologize for who I am. And so it was more than just encompassing my voice. It was literally accepting myself at a cellular level and being proud of all elements of myself. And my voice was just one of those pieces. But what I realized in that was that I had this very strong feminine voice element of myself that I hadn't really accepted before. And when I wrote this book, Unapologetically Enough, I wrote it over and over and over again, several times. Say a lot that I did control alt delete on 50,000 words 3 times. And when I wrote it this last time, it was from this place of knowing I am unapologetically enough. It was this cellular, this deep down rooted thing that I braced. And it wasn't just like I woke up one day. I think it was, you know, looking at the challenges and obstacles I'd overcome and getting to the point where I was finally like, I accept the fact that no, I'm not Brené Brown. No, I'm not Elizabeth Gilbert. No, I'm not Gabby Bernstein. No, I don't have 100,000 followers, but you're comparing my story. You're comparing my book to all these people. Clearly, I have something good to say. So I'm going to lean back. I'm going to write it one more time from the place of this strong, feminine, unapologetically enough person. So when I put it out into the world, hearing from people, strangers, that it was like I was writing to them. I was telling their story. I was speaking to their hearts and they felt like they knew me. That was really gratifying. And then to have it being called a mental health book because it's gritty. And when I think of entrepreneurship, I think of problem solving for sure. But when I think of it, I'm like, you know, in the depths of it, we know grit, we know resilience, we know a lot of us know burnout. I was grateful that people could relate to not only my story, my voice, but like the pain that I was able to share and then take it one step further, embrace it, learn from it, grow from it, be inspired by it. I think that's what strong voices do. I think that's what, when you're sharing your story from this strong space, you do relate to people, you connect to them, but you inspire them and you help them grow.
I think of when you were saying those last two lines, I was thinking of a tree and you know, the different experiences and stories that play out or unfold or manifest in our lives end up becoming our experiences. And those experiences, when we're aware and the lessons that we gain and learn from them end up becoming our strengths. And so those two lines you were saying, I was thinking, I was visualizing like trees, like uplifting, you know, others, you know, and you said strong voices. And I think of trees as like, you know, just really strong elements in our in our natural world. And they're just like super, super like resilient, right? And you're absolutely right. You know, strong voices, essentially what they do is they just uplift, you know, others through their own pain and suffering.
Yep. I say that a lot.
You're like, yeah.
I say that a lot because now putting this thing out and this next one out in April, I'm hopeful it has the same reaction, but what I'm currently living through and what my husband and I are currently encountering, he's starting his cancer journey here next week, knowing my, you know, I have 30 years of history here to look at my growth and the pain in the growth typically is story, comes out somehow in a story and somehow for the greater good. Like in the back of my head, I'm already thinking, this is going to be the next one. I'm literally living the next one. Not everyone can do that. And I appreciate I have the gift to create like that. We're all good at something. And this is just something I'm good at.
Well, you could also be good at something and then just not have the passion and the motivation and drive, you know, to actually implement it, right? Yeah. People can be super talented at something, but what if they're not passionate about it? That, to me, it's that... call that like velocity. So velocity is a combination of force and direction. So to me, you know, that passion is really that direction, right? It's that force and directions having somewhere to go. Whereas you have the skills and have that talent, you know, and there's no underlying push behind it, you know, theoretically it would just go nowhere, you know? So in terms of, for those that, let's flip this in a different way. For those that have not experience burnout as much, right? What would you say to those that have loved ones that have experienced burnout or have never experienced burnout themselves? Like, what would you like them to know?
So just from a key sign perspective, like recognizing a really passionate person suddenly loses the drive, chances are they're, you know, they have zero interest in going to work. They have zero interest in a hobby. Check in on them and see if, ask them how they're feeling, if they're sleeping okay, if you recognize signs that they're having a hard time taking a deep breath or that they sigh a lot, but they're not, you can tell that, you know, they're tight up here. They have that thing going on. Invite them to like go out in nature, take a hike. Nature's really cool. It really is a great natural
remedy.
Yeah. A meditation class or yoga, yin yoga, specifically yin yoga, the like restorative, some of those types of things. If you have never experienced it, you have friends who do, or that you know are, check in on them. It's something that is like, it's hard to come out of it. We end up almost addicted to the adrenaline and addicted to that rat race where it almost becomes uncomfortable to get out because it's building a new pathway. They do need support, you know? So check in on your stressed out friends every once in a while. Remind them to go hug a tree to
or biggest, just hug them.
Yeah. Oh, 20-second hugs. Totally. 20-second hugs are really great remedies. I believe wholeheartedly in the cold shower effect, the like cold plunge, but not everyone can get into a cold shower right away. So I encourage people to have like ice packs and like hold an ice pack by your neck for a couple of seconds, just to, you know, there's tons of things like that around, but check in on your stressed out friends.
Right. I think that's good because in this age of way more social media, you know, COVID, where, you know, it's normal being virtual and remote. And then with the advent of AI, so many more opportunities to be disconnected than actually connected, right? So what you just said definitely resonates. 20-second hug is interesting. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, there's actually a book out called Burnout. And it was written by two sisters, both doctors. And it came out right as COVID was hitting. And their whole thing was 20-second hugs does something, heart-to-heart does something to reprogram or to help your body come out of fight or flight into a state of relaxation. So that's something I would ask my husband, you know, all the time during COVID when I went from being a single entrepreneur to we were planning our wedding. Our wedding was canceled like 28 days before the thing was supposed to happen. Everything, you know, everyone was readjusting. I would ask for 20-second hugs all the time. And I could physically, I knew when 20 seconds hit because I could feel my body just go like this.
Interesting.
But there's something related to the bear hug and the nervous system. Our nervous system can relax after that.
Interesting. Probably has the same effect as like spooning or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And that would just be like a reverse hug.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So looking at time, I definitely want to close out, definitely talk about your next book. But before we do that a little bit more, can we talk a little bit about your publishing house? You had talked about being rejected, 70 plus, you know, literary agents. And then you were just like, you know what, let me just go make my own house. Right. Yeah. So how does your house, you know, what does that do comparatively to others? Like, what is your, I guess, you know, unique standpoint in terms of serving others?
Process. So I'm really interested in nonfiction. That's my secret sauce. I've been in it for 30 years. So I love good nonfiction, strong female stories. They don't have to be written by a strong female or have a strong female as the main person, but I would like a strong female in there somewhere. When somebody's interested in working with us, we operate as an agency of sorts. And so we do put a proposal together where we hire the editor, we hire the designer. And so hybrid is both the combination of self-publishing and hybrid and traditional publishing. The author has all rights to everything and is given, you know, access to approve everything. And we don't have any final say in cover design or anything like that. But I will use my experience and the expertise that we have with our distributors and knowing what retailers like to promote in some of those decisions. So while you have the final say, I'll I'll share what I know, what I've learned. And that goes for everything from length of story to what I think is really hot, what is going to last, what's going to sell, what isn't. I don't pick up legacy books, or I don't like signing or partnering with people who have legacy books or family picture books, things like that. Those are definitely more things that you can get created fairly inexpensively and sell directly to your friends and family. I don't think those types of things do well on retailer sites. We have partners, big warehouse, big distributor. We do a lot of prints on demand, but we can also do small print runs of 200 books, large print runs of 1,000 books. We have print partners with printers all over the world. And so we're getting competitive quotes for, you know, what would it cost to have like 5,000 of this printed, and what are we going to do with it? And a lot about authorship does come down to marketing. And so I say agency of sorts because I have all this experience, and not just with publishing other people's books, but with my own experience of being an author and moving thousands and thousands and thousands of books non-traditionally through subscription boxes and partnerships like that. So a lot of those things come together in more of a customized package when somebody says, hey, I've got this self-help book, or I have this, you know, educational something or another I would like to put out into the public. We just get on a call and we see if what you're creating would work through us. If I think it's a fit and I can support it and help it and get it to grow, then, you know, we put estimates together and away we go.
Awesome. I think that anyone that's considering about writing their first book or second or third, that'd be a great viable option, is to definitely check out her house. So we'll definitely put that, you know, in the links. And then your next book is coming out in April of this year.
The Enoughness Method. Yep. Guided journal to recovering from burnout. So it is definitely a tool if you have clients or friends who are experiencing it. Check it out. Available wherever books are sold.
I love it. I love it. Carrie, this has been a wonderful conversation. You know, it's, you can have endless talks. And like you said, you know, you can talk about it forever. And I think through the advent of sharing the stories, right, you had mentioned about a time period where, you know, before and after it exploded, right? So it almost seemed like people were experiencing it, but they just didn't really have the resource or the avenues to pursue. And now that it's more part of the, you know, common vernacular, right? Just people just, you know, understand it a lot better now. We still have ways to go. We, you know, more conversations to be had, and letting people know that, hey, you know, if you need help, let's seek it. Here's some resources. Are these avenues, you know, to go by? And, you know, we just want people to be healthy and happy body and mind, right?
Yep.
So.
Yes, exactly. It is, you know, you got to put a little elbow grease into it. It didn't just happen overnight. You're not going to come out of it overnight, and you have to stick with it. It's a new thing you have to love on.
For sure. For sure. Well, Carrie, thank you so much.
You.
We'll definitely drop all the links in the show notes when this airs, so people can check out and definitely buy your book. Guys, thank you so much for watching another episode of Thrive Bites. If you like this, please like, comment, and subscribe. And if you feel like this was a benefit for someone else, please let them know. And until then, please say goodbye to Carrie. Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, we hope you enjoy that episode. If you like that, please like, comment, and subscribe. And please follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, and anywhere that you listen to your podcasts. And if you felt that this was a benefit for someone else, please let them know. And also remember that the first 5 seasons, 150 episodes, now can be seen and heard on our new The Chef Doc app. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating, and we greatly appreciate it. So, and we'll see you on the next one.